Hello, Poppies. We are back with episode 41, Brain Pops, the podcast approaching mental and physical challenges behind the scenes of professional sports. My name is, as always, Dominic Theodoro. I'm recording from Bamberg, and I would also like to introduce my co-host, Lennart Stechmann. He still has a long beard. He's wearing a different t-shirt, though. This makes me kind of happy. And welcome, Lennart.
Yeah, hey Dom. I forgot to change my podcast shirt. I'm already regretting this now. No, but I hope you're doing fine in Bamberg. I think you guys got a good win this week, so I guess the mood is good over there.
Yeah, we secured the playoffs. For me, it's basically first time I'll be playing playoffs. So.
Oh. Exciting.
Yeah. And there are some strings attached, actually. I have to grow a beard myself, too.
Really? Is a playoff beard?
Yeah, that's what they call it. That's how they call it here. So
I like it.
In 4, 5, 6 days, I'll look relatively stupid. I know already because I just can't grow a beard. But, you know, it's part of the culture. And I try to fit in as best as possible.
Embrace it. I love it. This is going to be the bearded podcast then. I like it.
Of course you'll like it. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe for the English listeners, I don't know when our last English episode was, but what I do know is that the last episode, we still had our old logo. We, like, for everybody who's tuning in only in English, we got a new logo now, and we talked a little bit about it the last episode, in German, though, obviously. Did you get any feedback or something? Like, do you know how the people liked it?
I mean, I received a few messages. I also, you know, I think that's something we have to mention because that's usually never mentioned. We also got some, I wouldn't say it was negative feedback, but some people were like, it's a pity that the brain is gone.
Yeah.
And that's something I thought about too when we came up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think it's a great logo. It's colorful. It's fruitful. It gives so much room for interpretation, and we want it to be kind of like exploding, of course, with different colors, different strength of explosion, and I think therefore I hope it brings the point across that we are trying to bring across.
Yeah. The content or the brain pops you have, like, it can be anything, and I think that really comes across with this logo. I also love the brain, but, you know, like, the thing was with this explosion and this fruitfulness that we want to express with it, is it's just tough to put that in a brain, because that definitely looks like the brain is exploding, and that's not what we want. So this was kind of tough to integrate for us in this design process, but can't make everybody happy. Is what it is.
And we also got, like, a lot of great messages, like, that people really thought that is a great logo, and it looks kind of spot on, and so
it looks very aesthetic. Is that the word? Tough to pronounce it, but I really like the way it looks also. But if for any further questions, just hit us in the DMs or something. If you have any questions to the logo or anything that comes with it, we don't want to, like, break down everything again in this episode. But I think the point will come across, like, we'll touch on it in the English episodes also. So nothing for this podcast, nothing is really going to change.
No. Leonard, what do we have on the menu today?
Yeah. You came up with the idea. I really love the idea. It's a very interesting guest we have today. Same thing, like, as well as mental as physical expertise, I would say, playing, coaching. But maybe you can give us a little introduction on her, since you know her a lot better than I do. You guys are... a lot in touch, I think. So,
maybe
it's better for you to introduce.
I'll just try to say a few things. I'm sure when she introduces herself, she will come up with a more detailed version of that. But her name is Serena Benavente, as you know, because we will obviously...
it will obviously be in the title, as always.
Exactly. And I think I got to know her in the year, not too long ago, 2 years ago or something. And she has a very unique career, I would say.
Yeah.
Because she used to be a professional basketball player for Heidelberg. And she was playing for this team for 8 years. And after that, she even got into coaching. On the one side, she still is a performance coach. And on the other side, she still is an assistant coach. Assistant coach for the women's team who play in the first league. And the performance coach for the pro, former Pro A team, Heidelberg, who just got promoted to the Easy Credit BBL and will play, therefore, in the next year in the first league. And I think there will be a lot of perspectives and a lot of insights and a lot of opinions from her. And I think we have, we have so many things we could ask her, because this, like I said before, it is a really exotic career, I would say, because she still is with the team, with the same organization, and that, you know, you would probably agree on that, that usually never happens to that extent.
Very, very unique, very interesting how that happened, what were the thought processes behind that. And I think also we can do a lot of callbacks, since like we have the coaching side, we had a lot of coaches on here, we have the playing side, we had a lot, obviously a lot of players on here, maybe get some different perspectives on brain pops we had in earlier episodes. I'm really excited. So I'd say let's jump right into it, right?
Let's get her on the show.
Yep.
Poppies, here we are. We are online, we are live. Serena is with us, of course, Leonard as well, but Leonard is not the topic today. Serena, hello. Happy that you could make it. Happy that you'll be on the show today.
Hello, hello, guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
So I'll just try to get the show on the road. Serena, I said a few things about you already in the pre-show. I'll just try to go a little bit more into detail. If I mess up, please don't hesitate to correct me. Yeah?
Sounds good. No pressure, but don't mess it up.
All right. Yeah, there's no pressure, Dom. Here we go. Let's start. So I said already that you played for as a professional player for the team of Heidelberg, and that was from 2008 until 2017. And in your last year, you promoted to the first women's league, basically. And after that, you decided, okay, I don't play anymore. That's it with my career. We'll come back to that for sure, because we're going to ask you why.
Definitely some questions open there.
Fair enough. You wouldn't be the only ones.
In your last year as a professional player, you already started working as a performance coach for the, back then, we have to say, Pro A team of Heidelberg.
You have been
doing that until today, and you're still doing it. And in the season 17-18, you also started working as an assistant coach for the Heidelberg Baskets, the women's team. And you also have been doing that until today. And like I said already before, this is a... I wouldn't say strange, but let's call it a special journey. It's not normal, I would say, that somebody spent such a long time in one organization. Is that correct? What would you say to
that
this?
That is correct for sure. I'm definitely an anomaly in that sense. I'm very well aware of that. I know that usually, especially with foreigners or imports, professional players coming overseas, either they're coming over for a year or two just to get the experience, and then they say, okay, it's time to go back home, get a job, start, you know, the future in whatever that looks like for that individual. Or there are pros that come over and they don't stay in one place for the 8 seasons as I did, you know. They say, okay, I want to go up and move up in higher, you know, leagues, levels, or just in different countries. So I definitely am very well aware that I am not the normal path.
And what I love about this, I mean, you started playing as a player for Heidelberg in the Regionalliga. You moved up to the second league with them. You led them to the promotion to the second league. And now, in your last year, you even promoted to the first league. And, you know, we haven't even mentioned that you now also promoted with your Heidelberg men's team to the BBL. This is completely just happened a few days ago. So that begs the question, what's going on in your mind right now? You must be in high spirits, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think as you kind of listed out, you know, and when I joined the women's team in Regionalliga, they honestly didn't need me to promote. They were killing the game without a foreigner. But the head coach and manager at that time said, hey, at the next level, you know, we know that when you promote from one level to the next and in the States, when you go from middle school to high school to college, there's a different gap of athleticism, speed, all of that. And the coach here in Heidelberg saw that jumping from third division Regionalliga up to second division, they were going to need to bring in a foreigner. And so I guess to add to your story, like I was the first foreigner player on the women's side here in Heidelberg. And that was, so we promoted up with that. We had a crazy run. So for me, 7 seasons in the second division. And we built together and it's been pretty cool for that. And then with the men, it's a crazy feeling for sure. Just even talking about it now, you know, I think it's, especially with this last year with Corona, everything was crazy. And there's enough talk of that. I don't need to sit here and talk about that. But you forget when you're in the crazy hustle and bustle to really sit and reflect on, especially my journey, where I came from, what I went through, and then where I'm at now. It's pretty cool to say, okay, I am reaching the top level on the women's side as a coach, of course, and then also on the men's side to be a part of that journey the last 5 years was... I'm proud of myself, let's say, you know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty exciting. And I'm kind of on cloud nine for sure.
Do we want to jump on the men's BBL promotion, Dom, or promoting from women's team and then not you, playing?
I mean, let's start with that because this is also very interesting. Yeah. Because when I read this, I was like, huh? Okay, there must be an explanation.
It's a typo, right? Yeah. There must be something wrong.
Yeah, how did that happen that you moved up a league, worked on that for 8 years, 9 years, and then I guess you finally made it in a way? Maybe, like, I don't know if that was the goal right from the beginning, but and then you said, okay, was there an injury? Was like, what was the reason? How did that end up you
What's
not playing
the
in the first league then? Yes.
Yeah. No, I guess I have to back up a bit. And I know we talked about, you know, college and Dom, you had asked me before about my ACL injuries and all that. I don't want to dive too much into that, but like after college, I didn't want to play overseas. I was done playing basketball in general. It just was burnt out. Briefly, I redshirted, so I played for 5 seasons in college. Went through a coach's change, so that was also mentally and physically draining. And said, okay, I'm just going to continue studying. And that was, you know, I didn't know what else to do kind of thing. And then I came over here, and was like, okay, tops. Cause I came in actually in January of 2009, I had my tryout in, December of 2008 and then went home for like 2 weeks and then came back over and finished the season with them. And they said, okay, if you help us promote up to the second division, then we'll guarantee you, a season in the second division. And I was like, cool, you know, like that sounds like fun. For me, it was important to come over and fall back in love with the game. I've been very fortunate through my journey. Basketball's given me a lot. It's given me so many opportunities, some that I've taken advantage of, some that I haven't. But at the same time, again, my original plan coming overseas was not to play at the top division in the top country anywhere. It was strictly to say, hey, let me just fall back in love with the game that allowed me to go to a good college, to get a good education, you know? And I knew coming in that first season that I was joining a team with young players. The coach was very upfront when he was talking to me about signing. He said, hey, we have a young team. Most are, you know, as it is here in Germany, especially in the Regionalliga and even in second division of the women's side, most were students, you know, some were going through Abi, so high school graduation years, and it was a hobby team for them, you know. And I knew coming in, cool, like maybe it's not the top level, but I get to go have fun again. And I said, okay, after the half year, promote up, cool, I get another year, get to see what the second division's like. And then after that, I was like, oh, this is fun, you know. But I have to admit, a big thing as to why I kept coming out here was I was born and raised in California, and coming over here, I thought that the world was like California. You know, they say United States is a melting pot, and in California alone, Central California to Southern California to Northern California, it was eclectic and diverse. And I came over here and was like, holy crap, I know nothing about the world. I know nothing of other cultures. You know, driving just from here to Strasbourg was like, crap, if I drive 2 hours in California, I'm still in freaking California, you know? And here I can drive 2 hours from Heidelberg to Strasbourg and I'm in another country. I'm in a place with different food because I love me some food. And it just was mind blowing to me. And in that sense, it was like, all right, cool. I'll just keep coming back, keep coming back. And I found myself, I mean, now it's over 12 years that I've been out here in Germany. And honestly, I wouldn't change anything. Obviously, I've been very fortunate, the path that I've had, but I know I've worked hard for it. So I'll give myself a little pat on the back.
And then you guys moved up, and what, like... Like what
All
was
right.
the?
I didn't even answer
what
your
made
question.
You
my fault.
Quit? No, but it was still interesting. Like there's like a lot of stuff. I like you gave me some good questions now already, but still, yeah.
Right, there was an actual question. Right. So honestly, the last like 3 to 4 years in my career, so basically the second half of my career here, I had constantly thought, okay, this is the end year. This is the last year. I was getting older, you know, so recovery, as I know you guys have talked about recovery and performance, and I wish I could tell my younger self this, you know, a proper warm up, proper prehab, all of that stuff. I wish I could tell my younger self that, and shoot, I would still be playing today. But it got to where it was tougher. It was tougher to go to the gym for practices. It was tougher to recover after games. I was captain for all of those years, so I took on that responsibility of keeping, you know, from my mind, it was keep everybody on board, and that it was mentally and physically draining. And the last, like I said, 3 or 4 years, I had thought about it, okay, this is my last year, this is my last year. And then finally that last year, you know, we had a great run and we won and we got promoted, and it's crazy. I was actually looking at the film the other day, and you see everybody is like jumping around and really, really excited. And I kind of stopped off to the side and was just like a relief, you know, like it was cool. I've accomplished that. I had no goals of, you know, ever going into the first division. I was very clear on that just because I had played top level in the States. You know, I played Division One. I had some really, really crazy games, competitions, all of that. And yeah, it was kind of it's kind of a drop the mic moment because, as you guys said, why wouldn't you move up with the team, go play at the top level? That just was never my goal coming over here.
That's so interesting what you said. Like also the reasons you described for wanting to play. You wanted to fall in love with the game again. You wanted to like learn about new cultures and stuff. Like there's nothing I hear like this. I want to get this many points or this or that, these stats or this accomplishment. Like... That like because we talked about also like retirement and stuff on here earlier, and I one of our hypotheses was that like it's tough to quit because what are you like playing for? What are you like, what do you get praise for? And I think like you look for different, like this was to me is like the first unique thing when I hear you talk, like you look for different stuff than other players, I would say in a sense. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, that was kind of my story coming over. I definitely came over for, I wouldn't say completely. I don't think I'm like completely rare in that or alone in that sense, but I do know from the beginning, like I said, it was coming over, fall in love with the game again. After that half season in 2009, in a span of 2 weeks, I went to 4 different countries because I was like, okay, cool. Like this is going to be a short, you know, short lived thing. And I want to get the most out of it, you know? And I went to Prague, I went to Rome, I went to Greece, and I went to Amsterdam, but I know it was 4 different countries in 2 weeks, and I was just like mind blown. And after that travel and those experiences and you know, learning about art history in high school and then coming and going to Rome and being like, oh, this is the Trevi Fountain, you know, like that's, I can touch that, I can throw, you know, a euro or whatever into the stuff you read about, and then I got to do it. And for me, that was so fulfilling and something I didn't know that I was missing out on, for one, but something that I didn't know would, I guess, fulfill me or give me that kind of joy before I came over here and realized what I didn't know, you know?
Yeah, this is a... It's very humble, I would say. Like, listening to you, I really... really like how you talk about your own, your own career, your own path, basically. And if you, let's say, if you compare, let's coming back to the promotion with the women's team, if you compare that to the promotion with the men's team, how would you compare it?
I think tough it's difficult. Yeah. I think it's difficult to compare for many reasons. Dom, you and I talked about that we would talk anyway about the differences between being involved as a coach on a female team versus being involved as a coach on the men's team and me being a female in that sense. Like that's something, obviously, the elephant in the room, like as far as like being a part of the men's team and all of that. But I would say for me, playing myself, that would probably be the best promotion out of all of them. You know, I obviously won that first one, and then I with the women, I was promoted. Like we played that first division season, moved back down, played a second division, and then we moved back up again. So I moved up. I promoted on the women's side as a player and as a coach, and then on the men's side now as an athletic coach, which is a completely different role than what I had on the women's side, for example. So I'd say the best promotion would be definitely the one as a player, of course, because I had physical control. Like I was definitely a control freak on the court. Like it's not working. Okay, give me the ball and let's figure it out, you know. but at the same time, like it was also really rewarding being a coach, a basketball coach, let's say assistant coach on the women's side, because then it gave me a way. I faced different challenges that I never knew that I'd face. In a sense of, okay, how can I get through to this player? And I see the game this way, but how can they see it that way? And how can I, you know, get the best out of them? And on the basketball side, it was like, okay, because I was a point guard, you know, how do you read the game? Why do you see it that way? How can we make it better? Okay, we're at 30 seconds left. What do you think? You know, like it challenged me in a different way. And then the same thing with on the men's side, it was different because I wasn't so on the strategic side of it. I was more trying to get the best out of players physically, you know, and most of that obviously happens behind the scenes. And that's also a part that I love too, to say, okay, when nobody's watching, what kind of work are we going to put in? And how can we get you to the best we can come game day? Because obviously that's what all athletes are playing for is game day. I don't know. Did I skip the question again? I feel like this is going to be a theme.
No.
All good. For me right now, there are so many things I just there are so many things I would like to ask because there are so many angles you can look at things. Leonard, do you want to start or you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll go off script though, to be honest.
Yeah, you
let's
can.
Go Leonard. Bring it, Leonard.
Yeah. Since you already like, let's. Okay, so what I like differences you see, like now we talked about the promotions and stuff. What I like your main differences you see being involved with in men's basketball and female basketball. Where do you see differences? I mean, it's the same sport, obviously, but like the game is approached minimally in a different way, at least as I see it. How would you describe that?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest difference obviously is the gender and males versus females. And I mean, I can say it obviously as a female, like females are sensitive and males won't hold on to things. I guess I can say it that way. And I mean that in the sense of it's tough. It's really tough because I think to be
you
able
don't
to,
want to throw nobody under the bus.
Right. Like it. And maybe it's just the teams that I work with, but like the females that I worked with, you had to be more aware of everything on court, but also off court. Like they wanted to discuss, you know, things that, hey, family back home is an issue, or my girlfriend, boyfriend, I'm having relationship issues. How can that affect me? You know, and on the guy's side, like even as an athletic coach, like, yeah, we talked about stuff and they got problems or whatever, but they didn't let it carry it over onto the court. And so that was something where it was just like my experience is that guys are able to shut it off. Let's say as a whole, cause I don't think everybody's like that. Both male and female. I've met males that, are very sensitive, and I've met females that like, just don't give a
sure.
fuck and they just switch on and off. So yeah, I think that's a difficult one to answer, to be honest.
But I love just your answer just now, really. Like, because I think you portrayed it as a strength for guys to be able to shut that off. Me, coming more from the mental side, I wouldn't agree to that. Because
okay.
I think it's really, like, if you put that on the table, I mean, it can always be something of too much. Like if you let your off court stuff be too much on there, okay. But I think those are factors that actually really you can see on the court. Like if you have some issues privately or something, and if you just say you shut that off, maybe it could be a lot easier to like still play and perform if you had somebody to talk to. Or if like, even if just the team knows, okay, he has something today or she has something today. Like to me, I think that would be a strength of a team if you can put that on the table. So that's why I was so interested in these questions, because stereotypically talking, females put that stuff on the table and talk about it. And to me, that would be something, okay, this puts the team together and like get camaraderie out of it and stuff.
Yeah, I think,
would you
I think
agree?
The idea of the team concept to a certain degree, I think I know what you mean as far as like, okay, she's just having a bad day. Like let's almost rally behind her or him, let's say, and maybe that's what you mean as far as like, okay, maybe she's down. Like we got to give a little extra boost to pick him or her up. So I definitely get that, the point that you make, but I think like, if I can then give my experience as a player, I was the type, I guess, in this conversation, I was definitely more of the male response. Again, we're talking stereotype of, okay, I got my shit going on at home, or I'm missing home or whatever. I got to turn that off because that's going to affect me and my game. And I don't have that chance. And honestly, too, I don't know if this makes sense, but like there were many a times when I played, I was coming in as a professional. And I was having issues with certain things that the, let's say, German players were being more sensitive about, when I was like, okay, but I'm here to do a job and therefore I need to shut it off. Like, therefore I need to perform. This is my job. I got to put up numbers. I got to put up, you know, keep everybody together. I have to win. And on the other side of it, for like, again, I can only use my experience here with Germany. It was like, yeah, but chill. Like, it's just a game. And it's, you know, like, and it's funny that I say that now, because obviously I came over, as I said in the beginning, to have fun and like, you know, to fall in love with the game. But for me, that doesn't mean that you can't not compete. And I think that that level of competitiveness makes the game fun and made me fall in love with the game. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, and I agree with you. But I, as a player for myself, I definitely was that type of like, okay, I got shit going on, but like I get to walk in between the lines and I get to play a game and put out my frustration, but that doesn't necessarily mean I need to share it with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously people are different.
Yeah. And
like the name of our last episode was Happy Medium. So I guess that fits there perfectly. Like you don't have to talk about every little itty bitty thing. But to me, in a way, I think sometimes it would be good to just talk about some stuff, get some steam off. And, you know, like people can like know what's going on. Okay, he's super sensitive today for some reason. He yells at everybody. I know why. Now I know, okay, I cannot take it too serious. I have some reason, not into detail, but I think that can help on teams, but obviously
no,
just to a certain
you
amount.
You know what, you're totally right, though. I think that that also is the beauty and the challenge of team sports in general is, and that's why it's team sports are definitely not for everybody. You'll see people playing team sports and you're like, you are definitely an individual team, like an individual sport player. And I think that like as a player, but also obviously my last 5 years has been as or 4 5 years has been as a coach. And that's the beauty of it. And exactly what you said, like there are some players that need to talk about it and there are some players that don't. And how do you make that mesh with, okay, I got to be an ear out. I have to be that support system for them. And, you know, especially if they're imports, if they're foreigners, if they're American and they're away from home and they can't talk it out to somebody or they can't, you know, have that kind of vent session, it's definitely important for that. And I think there's value in both sides of it. And it's trying to find that balance for each individual. But then how do we put those pieces together to make it that we're all coming to one goal to compete on the court?
Totally agreed.
I try to be an attentive listener over here. It's again, I like to say it, for me this was again a little webinar. So Leonard, if you don't mind, since we were talking about her being an assistant coach and performance coach at the same time, I would really like to dive into both of these roles. Maybe first of all, starting you off, what do you prefer?
Well,
tough question after tough question.
It's actually not tough. I actually am very open with that. I prefer the performance side of it. I prefer the performance coach side of it. I honestly never saw myself as a basketball coach. And of course, we talked about stereotypes earlier, but you know, of course there's a stereotype. Okay. You play and then you become an assistant coach or you go straight to head coaching, at whatever level that may be. And that's kind of the, let's say, quote, natural progression for, we won't say everybody, but it's not a surprise if that's the case. And, that was also questions in my later years of playing. Hey, like, are you going to stay out here? What's the next step? And they all asked, like, are you going to be an assistant coach? And I said, I mean, I've been very vocal, you know, I'm very open in that sense. I don't want to coach. So my last season as a player, I was a performance coach for the men. So I kind of had a dual job there, if you will. Of course, priority was playing. But I got to get in on the performance side with the men. And I found out then that I really, 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 really liked it, even though it was only part-time. You know, it was only a few days a week. And obviously, like I said, priority on the weekends. There was actually games where, like, I'd be playing for the women, end the game, and then I'd run over to the other gym, to the men's gym, and sit on the sideline or, you know, do warm-ups for the men. Like, that happened my final season playing just because I had found this passion that I didn't know about, you know. Obviously, in my studies, I studied the human body and all that. And through my injuries, like, I was very interested in the human body and athletes and how we can get them to be, you know, their best, because I had really good support system in that. And I wanted to be that person for the players coming over here for so many different reasons. And the more I did both, the more I realized that I really, really like the performance side of it, because there were things that, like, for me, I think I can get more back to basic, simple magic moments on the performance side versus on the basketball side. And that, I guess if I want to explain it more, is that, like, I can get an athlete, or I try to get an athlete to realize something that will last them for the future of their career. Whether that's on basketball, of course,
longevity.
Basketball. Yeah, longevity, exactly. So if I can make something click in some small moment, then that's money right there. Like, that's huge. And those are the things I get excited about. And I feel like I'm more capable of doing that on the performance side, even though I was a player and I know I was able to help young players on the young female players on the girl side. But I think for me, it was just more a light up of, cool, on the performance side, they can take that and I don't have to be there anymore, you know?
Does your, I mean, we haven't, you just mentioned that briefly in the beginning, that you tore your ACL, I think 2005, correct me if I'm wrong.
2004,
twice. 2004, yep. The first one, mm-hmm.
Both
and
were
then
in 2004.
After rehab, the second one you said?
Both were in 2004. February 2004 and October 2004.
Oh, whoa. So it was right after rehab, right? A second practice after the rehab, you tore the same again.
Yeah, so it was the my final game as a freshman, my final home game as a freshman, then obviously was out, rehab during the summer, and then I came back, felt good, felt ready to go. The second practice of my sophomore year, we did like an inter-squad scrimmage, so like blue against white or whatever. Very early on, bam, something, you know, popped, felt it. I knew it right away, but of course was in complete denial. Like, walked it off. I'm fine. We're good. Shit. I felt this feeling before. So it was all in 2004.
And, you know, we spoke on the podcast a lot about, you know, that performance coaches kind of get their passion from a, you know, former injury. Was that the same with you, that you after, maybe already after the first or latest after the second one, that you were like, okay, good, I gotta do something different?
Yeah, definitely after the first. Obviously after the first, that was my first major injury. Devastating, and I mean, the whirlwind of emotions, and physical highs and lows, you know, the benchmarks, as you know, like with rehab in any sense, but with ACL, like the bigger reconstructive surgery. I basically lived in the athletic training room my entire college career then, you know, because once it happened, and in my freshman year, obviously the whole summer I was there rehabbing, double days in the athletic training room, working on, you know, short arc quads, like, can you get your quad to activate? Like, you know, and through that, I didn't know it at the time, how much that affects, obviously, or impacted my decisions today. Of course, I can't even think of the English word, German. Yeah, English word. I'd sammled meine Erfahrung. I collected my experiences there. Yeah. And I refer back to them to this day, from after the first ACL, second ACL, throughout the college career, with those little bumps and bruises and everything. And that definitely pointed me in the direction of wanting to help people, because I had such, like, as I mentioned, I had really, really great support in the training facility with the training staff, the doctors, physical therapists. And I definitely, it could have gone another way if I would have had one person that just, you know, didn't believe in me or didn't push me or help me see, you know, the future kind of thing. That there's, it's going to get, going to be okay.
So after the second one, how did you manage, like, second practice, if I got it right, and you tear it again, you knew it right away, you said you were in denial. After a while, I guess you realized it, and how do you do that? Like, you just came back through this 6 months of rehab, probably not the greatest time of your life, and then second practice you realize, all right, again.
Yeah,
like, how, like, How did you manage to do that, or what helped you in a way? What were factors that helped you? What didn't help you?
Honestly, my family was huge, and that's how it's always been, for sure. It was one of those, okay, why? Like, that was more the question that I had the whole time. Like, why did this happen? What did I do? Am I not supposed to be playing? I think those are all normal reactions to that, you know? But at the same time, I did know how fun basketball was for me, and I just kept going back to the passion of the game and what the game allowed me to do, you know? I actually started basketball really late. I was a softball player and didn't really start basketball until high school. So until I was like 13, 14, 15, when I really started to focus on it. And then I found out, okay, I'm kind of good at it, and schools are interested, and you want to give me money to play, you know, and to get my education. Oh, heck yeah, let's go, you know. And I wanted to ride that out, and that kind of motivation for, hey, I'm lucky and fortunate to be at an institution that is still going to, you know, back me with my rehab. I still get to go to school. I had really good, of course, family, but when I was at school, good teammates who, you know, always kept an eye on me. And as I mentioned, like the staff, and that was just that motivation of, okay, this collective, okay, I want to get back on the court. I have to check it out. I played a solid freshman year. Didn't get a chance to do sophomore year. If I'm going to be studying, I might as well be playing, you know, in that sense of, all right, then you got to find something. What's your motivation? And my motivation was just, I don't want to sit on the sideline anymore. You know, like, I'm an athlete and I want to play. Let me go.
Impressive for sure. To like come back from an injury twice like that in such quick succession.
Yeah, zooming back in to your passion of being a performance coach, if I ask you now what your philosophy is, yeah, as a performance coach, what would you say? I mean, you have been doing that now for quite a few years, but if you would sum that up in a few words.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're right. I've only been doing it for a few years, and I still feel like a rookie in it, for sure. There's so much to learn. There's so much to, you know, to figure out. And I know, Dom, you and I have talked about it, and I've listened to you guys, you know, some other episodes here. And just honestly, what I've learned over those few years is keep it simple, stupid. Like, really, there's so many, and I know you guys have talked about it on this too, but like, there's so many things out there. There's so many theories. There's so many practical things that have, you know, they've worked, and they've been put to the test, and they've worked. And especially, let's say, the first year, as I was my last year of playing, my first year as a performance coach, and then really going into, oh crap, like, I'm going to take on a bigger role in technically my second year performance coach. Like, okay, I gotta go online and just, you know, digest everything that's out there and try and find something. And okay, then I did this. I made so many mistakes. I'm still making mistakes. Let's be clear on that. But I made so many mistakes in my first couple of years, just of like, okay, I see this, let me try this with, you know, myself and with my athletes. Oh wait, no, like, now this guy says that, and I definitely jumped around. And like I said, I'm still learning, but the simplicity and the back to basics work so well. It's not always sexy. It's not always super fun. Like, but when you're dealing with longevity of high quality athletes and high performance grinding on that body, they appreciate it so much. And that's something that I found with the guys that I've worked with. Of course, I add some fun stuff in there and some awkward things or whatever. But in the end, it always came back to, all right, cool, we're going to start with, you know, 90-90 transfers. Then you're going to do tabletops, open up your hips. And then we're going to go to shoulder, like your joint by joint approach. Like, it's so simple. They're just like, wait, this makes sense. Like, why can't we do, you know, this thing I saw on Instagram or whatever? Like, oh no, why? Then I'm just going to hurt myself in training. And obviously, as we all know, that is not the goal of training.
Yeah. Interesting question for me that pops up right away. Sometimes working with athletes, professional athletes, You know, if you come up, if you tend to come up the same things, you know, athletes sometimes respond like, oh, again? How do you, I'm sure you've experienced that yourself. How do you deal with that?
Sure. As I said, the basics are not sexy and sometimes they're not fun. So I definitely, I have my kind of mental checklist, you know, my performance checklist of activation things we want to do. And sometimes I'll just throw, again, keeping it with the simple theme, is I'll throw in like a little wrench here or there, something a little bit different, as close your eyes or make it a competition. Or, you know, I think the biggest one, obviously, for, we're all just big kids. Athletes are all just big kids. So if you throw a game at them, if you throw a competition at them, if you throw some sort of wrench that makes it a little bit challenging, then they're already locked in. Now they want to like master it in 5 minutes. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, you know, and obviously it depends on the spectrum. If you're dealing with, you know, 8 to 15 athletes, some are going to get it really quick and some are going to be like, holy crap, I need like a week, 2 weeks, a month to master this basic skill. So I think that, like I said, I have my checklist of things, but then also have little ways to tweak it so that it makes it challenging or just at least different. Maybe not challenging, but I'll give a different cue. And then it's like, ah, okay, cool. Let me focus on that in this same single leg RDL that we've done over a thousand times. But now I'm telling you, okay, take a look at or take a peek at your toe, your back toe, point it this way. Okay, maybe your hip. Think there's a rod going through your hip and turn it on its axis. You know, little cue things, or like I said, little wrenches that either physically or mentally challenge them or change it ever so slightly.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Very interesting words. I actually discovered myself in what you were saying, that you just try to give them a little tweak every now and then, that they stay mentally engaged. And another big thing you said is the aspect of, you know, throwing games at them, like small games that mimic somehow the demands of the sports. What I personally have experienced when I do this, all of a sudden athletes start laughing. Yeah. And I don't even know who said it, but a good coach said once, when athletes are laughing, there's a very good, very, very good chance that they are also listening a lot. And that's what I try. You know, I like you said before, I also made a ton of mistakes and I'm still making a lot of mistakes. But this is something that proved for me that once you cannot do it every practice, of course. No. Every once in a while, throw something else at them. Like you said, I like the wrench, how you put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this right away brings me to my next question, but maybe indirectly you have already answered it. For you, what makes a good performance coach in your mind? What qualities?
Ooh, that's good. Honestly, and this might sound crazy, but I think connection. And I say that in the way that my goal is to connect with each athlete in whatever way they can trust me, or Dom, we talked about this, buy in to what I'm saying. The buy-in term is so overused, so I don't really like it. But that's why I say connection. Yeah. I think that my advantage, I would say, that I try to use my advantage, is the fact that I played. Is one advantage. And another advantage, what I felt with, like, let's say on the women's side, the Americans coming over. So I'm an American and, you know, I'm away from home and I did it playing and now I'm doing it coaching. And the same with the men on the men's side. I think just that connection of, okay, I can more or less speak the lingo, you know, when I show something, I know the angles, or I know how to show it to where it looks like it's a basketball move, or the connection from off court to on court. And those little things that allow me to kind of joke with the player. Like you said, if the player's laughing, then they're listening, or they're laughing at you, which is something else. But, you know, at least they're focused on you, you know. I think that would be the biggest thing. And then after that, you have to obviously put up or shut up then, right? Like, you can get in on it, But if, especially now with how much crap is out there on YouTube and Instagram and all of that, like if you can't, I'm not a big science person. Like I definitely try to dumb everything down. So one that I can understand it, and then also so the athletes can understand it. And that's if I can explain an athlete why he or she is doing what she's doing, what he or she's doing, then that already is that connection there too. Like, all right, cool. Like, let me try it. Oh, that felt good. Okay, let me give you that little wrench. Oh, wait, that even felt better. You know, like, it's amazing how much they turn into little kids again when they find that they can do something new or something they never thought to do or never thought that they could do. And I like that challenge in it for sure.
So we had a volleyball coach here on the show, and he came up, like he used to also play volleyball as a pro, and then he became a head coach. And something he picked up in a book and really found true for himself was that he said in order to become a coach, he had to kill the player inside him.
Yes, I agree.
Do you agree? And have you killed her already?
100% agree. Especially as okay, for the on the women's side, you know, as assistant coach, and as I said, with the basketball side, on the men's side, athletic, I give my input sometimes on the side away from, you know, but like head coach is the coach, basketball side co-coach, they take care of that. But again, that's my advantage. I could be like, hey, so-and-so is open in the corner, take a look. Or when you attack this guy, he always jumps this way or that. Like I can throw those little inputs in as a performance coach. But on the flip side, on the basketball side, it's so frustrating. Like it's so frustrating
to stand on the sideline,
you know? And there are things where it's very humbling because when I thought my coach was crazy and yelling at me on the sideline and they were like, why don't you see this? And why do you do that? And look at this. And then I'm the crazy coach on the sideline, like yelling like, why? And like, one of my old players, she would always just be like, or she would always frustrate me and always be like, "Warum? Like, what are you doing? You know? And it really is, you have to, because I would like to think that all of us are unique in some sort of way. And that's also with athletes. You see the game a certain way, you approach the game a certain way. And there's a uniqueness to everybody in that sense. And so how I see the game may be different than another person, as well my player sees the game, but that doesn't mean that we can't kind of figure it out all together. And what worked for me as a player may not work for that player as a player. And that was very difficult for me. And Dom, to answer your question, side note, she's still in here. Like the fire is in there. And I definitely would be like, I talk so much crap. I'm like, oh, I could like lock you up and you know, that's never going to go away. But I think that in order to decrease my frustration and driving myself insane, you have to shut off the inner player for sure. Because what works, like I said, what works for you won't work for necessarily a player you're trying to coach.
What were there like, I think that's very interesting that you say that, like what worked, like we're all very different, how we learn, how we approach the game and stuff. What was like a ha-ha moment for you where you realized this worked perfectly for me, but for this particular player, it doesn't work at all? Like, was there like some example where you could like really see it?
That actually goes back to what we talked about, like approach to players. Because I was the type of player, like you could yell at me. Like I had a coach in high school, a club coach, he would get right in my face and like, thankfully, most of the time he had gum because his breath was rank. But like he would get in my face, he'd tell me what to do, yell at me, scream at me, tell me how horrible I was. And I'd be like, got it. And then let me go prove you wrong, or let me go like do something. And I tried to do that sometimes and it didn't work. Like it just was not, you know, that was a challenge for me as well. A learning process, let's say. How to figure out how I can speak with certain players and what buttons to push or what buttons to be like, that's not going to work at all.
What are cues for you there? Like talking about the buttons to push, like do you have any like techniques, tactics or something to like find that out, to build this relationship to the players?
It sounds simple, but just trial and error, honestly. You know,
I mean, makes sense.
Yeah. But also too, that comes to what my answer was to Dom, as far as my philosophy, is that connection, you know, being able to see, sometimes I'll ask directly. If I can't figure a player out, I'll just ask directly, hey, can I yell at you or can I not? Like, how do you take it? And most of the time players will be completely open and honest with you. They'll definitely say, hey, I need you to yell at me. Like I've definitely had players on the women's side when I was assistant coach, and they would say, I need more input from you. I want you to yell at me. And there are definitely players that, don't yell at me in front of the team, like pull me to the side, you know, in that sense. And the first is the connection, simply from asking, but also, as I said, trial and error, because some players don't know how they respond. Some players need it and they just don't know it, you know.
And coming back to what we talked about, the difference between men and women, do you find that easier to find these, let's say, buttons, or like to talk about these topics? How do I approach here? Are there differences? Is that easier with women or men?
For me, I won't say necessarily, again, with the whole stereotype of the genders, but for me, it was easier on the playing side with the women, just because I think it was easier for them to open up and connect with me, because for the most part, I was doing what they were doing. I was in the situations that they're in. And my first year coaching, I was coaching players that I played with. So we had already had that relationship. So we had already had that, like, okay, I can kind of transfer how I was a leader to you as a teammate and carry that over to being your coach. And let's not forget, I was the assistant coach. So I can get away with a lot more as an assistant coach than a head coach can, as far as, you know, different avenues to approach. And that, I definitely took full advantage of that as well, you know. But I guess that was my job, so I guess I did something right.
Maybe one quick question to that. What, or
no, go ahead.
Dom, I didn't want to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Like, I was gonna, like, because we had Dom, you're the assistant coach, Hilke, on here, assistant coach of Bamberg, and we talked to him about the role as an assistant coach a little bit. Maybe you could describe how you see your role as an assistant coach.
Sure. So again, my advantage for being in Heidelberg so long is that I was the assistant coach to the head coach that coached me as a player. So in that sense, mm-hmm. I mean, I was already a step up, to be honest, because as a player, as that player coach relationship to the head coach, we were already figuring out our way. You know, we were already figuring out how we could communicate with each other. You know, and that's normal too. Captain and leader takes care of internal stuff with the team as far as you can go before you, if necessary, have to bring in the head coach. Or I had to filter, you know, what information got to the head coach in that sense, the necessary stuff to help us move forward. And I very much continued that role moving into the assistant coach role. It was the same, as I said, my advantage also was that I was coaching players that knew me and knew who I was as their captain and leader. And for me, that was more or less a smooth transition, because I was already building up to that for the 8 seasons that I had played with the players. And so I think as an assistant coach, for me, it was see the little things that maybe, because a head coach, you have to see everything. You're responsible for everything. You have to see, okay, who comes in, who comes out as far as subs, what systems are we running, how's the flow of the game and all of that. So that's during game, like seeing the little things, obviously talking to the players when they come off the court. But in practice, or I was in charge of individuals as well, creating, again, those connections and those intimate, in the sense of, okay, we can have more one-on-one. I have more time to do that. At that point, our coach wasn't professional. So I had most contact with some of the players. And so it was able to say, okay, hey, coach, today, so-and-so, like you said, some girls want to talk, or some, not girls, sorry, take that back. Some players want to talk about, you know, what's going on in their lives or not. And that was also an advantage to be like, hey, coach, like today this might be a little rough. We're going to push through it, but just so you're aware of this or be aware of that. I think it was definitely not detective, but just like I said, a filter between everything that's going on in a team, in the team, and the stuff that got to me. Then I then filtered again to the coach to help him be going back to be the best that he can be, so that he can serve the team as best as he can.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. I think Hilke kind of described it similar. And to me, like, going back to everybody is unique, obviously, and has like his own approach to, like, obviously also coaching and head coach have like this approach that they're very good at. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be in that position. But there is always a price coming with that, you know, always some stuff they can't see. And I think that's why the relationship between head coach and assistant coach is probably underrated in a way, because I think like assistant coach can pick up, to put it negatively, a lot of slack.
Sure, 100%. And I think that's someone actually asked me last year, you know, can you see yourself as a head coach? And again, was like, well, I never saw myself as an assistant coach, but okay. You know, so there's that. But no, and they said as a head coach, and I said, honestly, I love my position. And exactly what you said, Leonard, like I can... not get away is the wrong term, but like I can get away with some things that a head coach cannot, you know. I can get in touch and be real with you know, players and situations, and get away again with saying something, and maybe it's not politically correct, or maybe, you know, and it's, people are going to be pissed off at me, but that's okay. You know what I mean? Like I can get the best out of players. And I can do that individually a lot better as an assistant coach than I can as a head coach. Because, again, as a head coach, you have the whole team to think about. You have the whole game to think about. You can't look at those little details. Not that maybe a head coach doesn't want to or can, but sometimes it's just not physically possible for them to do that. So I love the idea of being behind the scenes. I have no problem being behind the scenes.
But sometimes, that's how I experience it also as a team manager. Sometimes, maybe you also had that experience that you end up in some situations being in the middle, you know, being in the middle of your head coach and the player.
Sure.
And this can, sometimes that can be a tough spot. You are then all of a sudden... discover yourself in. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely tough. And I think if you talk to anyone who knows me, is I'm definitely a straight shooter. I love to communicate. Like I sometimes over communicate, but I'd rather that than not. And I think that has helped me with some of these, let's say, difficult situations you speak of, Dom. And being able to, some things, like I said, that filter, right? Some things that you feel the coach needs to know or not, or vice versa about, you know, the coach to the player. But I think that understanding both sides, because you do get stuck in the middle, because the player feels like they can talk to you about, okay, hey, I'm not getting this playing time. Coach doesn't like me. I have crap going on at home. And coach on the other side is saying, this player is not performing, and this player, you know, we need to kick him in the ass. And sometimes it's easy to say, okay, now I can filter from the coach to the player and vice versa, but it's not. It's not always black and white like that. And I think that's exactly what you're speaking of. Sometimes it's turned, in my experience, it's turned into a big blow up, and there's no nice way to put it, and you can't escape that. I think to think, or if I were to sit here and say, oh yeah, it's been fine, and we've put out every fire and there's been nothing wrong, I would be lying, and I think anybody would be in that sense to say that. You're dealing with human beings in the very, you know, dumbed down version of it. You're dealing with human beings, and everyone's got some sort of ego, and everyone's got some sort of agenda. But that's the beauty of team sport, and I like to think of the assistant coach, or also with the performance side of it when I'm with the guys, is putting out those little fires and trying to figure out ways for them to see it from the other person's perspective.
Yeah. Very well put. I really like that answer.
Brain pop alert.
Yeah.
Good thing we're recording this so I can, you know, play it back and see what I just said, because I have no idea. I forgot already.
Well, I have one more thing I would really like to ask you. We said in the beginning that it's like a really unique career for you, being in one organization for so long. But what's the beauty of it for you? I mean, you mentioned a few things already that, for example, your transition from a player to an assistant coach was, of course, way easier. But what are other things you would like to highlight? Anything that comes to mind?
I mean, the first and foremost is that I am very fortunate of where I ended up. I mean, Heidelberg is beautiful. It's a university city. I'm from California, which, of course, everyone's like, what the heck are you doing here? But, you know, let's be real. Like, I was born and raised, went to college in California, had the California life. And coming over here, as I said before, castles, like what? Like that, like that are, you know, hundreds of years old, cobblestone, what? Like old bridges, all of this stuff that just, I'm not a big history person, but to imagine the people that have walked down these streets, to imagine the people who were on ships that came through the river, down the river, you know, just those little things of like everything in Heidelberg itself. It's gorgeous, great people, a mix of people as well, because it is a tourist town. And when I first came here, that was also an advantage for me, was that there was an American military bases here. So there was a little bit of home. My first season, I lived with a host family. I have two younger brothers. And so my host family, I had two younger sisters and also a brother. So it was a sense of home as well. So I felt very comfortable from the moment that I came here. And I think that's a huge advantage that's kind of carried over until now. It's been definitely a family environment for me. It's definitely my second home. Wherever my parents are, that's definitely home, will ever all and always be. But just the location and what that is, what Heidelberg is a huge reason as to why I stayed. But an even bigger reason are the people and the connections that I've made. Like I said, it's my second family out here, not only literally with my host family, but like the teammates' families that I now, know and enjoy. And it's just that, it's that chapter in my life, you know? Like I said, I've been here for 20, geez, that we'll do another podcast if I'm here for 20 years. but you know, 12 years, that's a third of my life. I was just on my last birthday, I was thinking of that. And like, it's been pretty cool to come out here and see what I've accomplished and see what I've done. And I get like awkward talking about it. Cause But it is cool. Like I do realize the situation that I'm in. I do realize like what I've kind of created, let's say for myself. And that's pretty cool. And that's another reason why I want to keep the journey going. I want to see what's next. Of course, as we said before, like there's definitely different ways it could go next season. Let's say, I have options. But yeah, I think that's, Heidelberg itself. And the people and the connections that I've made here.
You still go back always in the summer to California?
So yeah, as a player, I always went back in the summer and during Christmas. Because on the women's side, we had, you know, I think the longest I went home was for like 3 weeks, which obviously for men's Pro A and especially BBL, that's you just don't go home for Christmas.
No way.
There's no way.
Yeah.
and so actually when I started... after I retired from playing, that was like one of the last few years I went home twice in the year. And then it just became in summers because then I started to increase my role as a performance coach with the Pro A. And then they switched their terms or their schedule as well to where they had, you know, the Christmas game on the 22nd or 23rd of Christmas. And then again on the 26th, 27th of December. And so it became less and less. And actually... I haven't been home now for over 3 years, which is definitely shitty. It was planned last year, but you know, that thing happened. The goal is to get back every summer, but like I said, hopefully I can this year, but I have a lot going on. So, but of course I got to figure out and make time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That was so like, I just want to say like, thank you so much for sharing, all this knowledge from these 12 years and obviously earlier also, but, and I hope you can stay a lot longer there or wherever it takes you. Dom, do you still have something open you really want to talk about? Otherwise, I didn't forget that one last question we always ask.
Yeah, maybe one question. I'm not sure if I've asked that before, but what are your expectations for the BBL?
Challenge on challenge on challenge on challenge. But let's go. No, I think, like I said before too, with like every promotion comes new challenges. Every promotion comes, strategically new things, speed, athleticism, all of that. If I do continue to be the performance coach and get to be in the BBL and become, you know, a colleague of you, Dom, there's plenty of work to be done, and as I said, I'm not done learning. I got plenty to learn, and I'm just trying to soak up everything. And again, the whole reason why I'm still doing it is to try and figure out the best way that I can get athletes to believe in themselves and to be the best they can on the court. At the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Great wrap up.
Yeah, I like it.
Serena, thanks so much. But yeah, there's this one question. Leonard, come on, you go ahead.
You know it, I guess, since you listened to a couple of episodes. Is there somebody you would like to hear on this podcast?
Yeah, I am. I actually was telling Dom, since I've listened to the podcast, I knew the question was coming. The first person that popped into my mind...
Before you say it, Leonard, she is a puppy, huh? You know that. She listens to our episodes.
I do. I listen to both English and German. Sometimes I get a little lost in German if it goes really, really fast. But for the most part, I got it for sure. Yeah. Yeah, so the person I thought of, actually, her name is Sydney Parsons. And she is now currently, or for the next season, is the head coach in Hanover for the first ESTA DBBL. Last year she was in Wasserburg, and then now she's moving forward and is the head coach there. Is also the head coach for the under 20 national team for the girls, assistant coach on the national team, as well the A-kata. And yeah, she's just, she also has a crazy story that I think you guys would have fun, kind of like we did here, have fun in that. And just a strong female that has good stories, and I really, really enjoy working with her, for sure.
Sounds awesome. I hope you can hook us up with a connect.
No worries. I'll get on it, for sure.
That sounds awesome. Nice.
All right. Thanks a ton, Serena. Let's, of course, we'll stay in touch. Of course, we always stay in touch.
Definitely.
And
Leonard, yeah. It was nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you too. Maybe someday in person, we'll see. And somehow celebrate the promotion, I guess. Probably not really possible, but definitely... somehow celebrate that. All the best to
Heidelberg.
Yeah, we'll
definitely try. I mean, the work's not over yet. We have the championship game against Leverkusen on the weekend, so that there's still business to take care of. So it would be nice to actually win the championship, and then we can actually celebrate it. That would be great.
Nice. Then good luck for the weekend, and Dom, I see you in the after show.
I will. Yeah. Bye, bye, Serena.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, here we go. We're back for the after show. And it's been a couple of days. I see some progress in that playoff beard, my dear Dom.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
It suits you well.
No, it does not.
I always knew you tried to come after me.
I tried to fight that battle today. I lost heavily, so I guess I gotta keep it growing.
Yeah, but the puppies just came out of the show and probably had some brain pops. So you already had, or we already had a couple of days to think about them. So, yeah, what popped up in your mind afterwards, after listening to it again, or maybe at the end of the day, thinking about it?
Well, first of all, I have to say it, take my hat off to her. She's incredibly humble. That's what I already said during the podcast. She's very selfless, I think, but at the same time, she's authentic and also very reflected, or like self-conscious, I had the feeling. That was just like a few words I wanted to mention here. And I really enjoyed what she was saying, what she was talking about. And I really enjoyed the way she was talking about her journey. That was like...
The passion, huh?
Yeah, passion, exactly. And that was really... it was a good listen. I have to give her that.
Yeah, I agree. I also really liked the way she talked about her job, her playing career, what drove her, like also ups and downs, you know. Yeah, and also, I really enjoyed it too.
And also the fact that she loves to communicate. I think you could hear that. The way how
you're
she
very was, important. Yeah,
you
know?
And I think that's exactly the exactly the kind of the person you want to have in both of these positions. You know?
Yeah, true. Because you're talking performance coach and assistant coach, which we talked about towards the end a lot.
And player, of course. And,
Yeah, player also, of course. But I think, Yeah, player also, of course. We also touched on that in the beginning of the episode, right? Yeah, communicating is just key. It's very key for a successful team. Yeah.
What really got me thinking, I think she put it out very bluntly that, you know, that situations in professional sports can blow up, because she said that you're dealing with people's egos, you know, you're everybody sort of has their own agenda, and but what I really liked is the way she is positioning herself. I think she thinks of herself as being like some sort of a facilitator between the coach and the athletes. And I think, I'm trying to avoid using her words now. I think she tries to light a fire by helping both sides, looking at things through the lens or also through the perspective of the other side. Yeah. That's what she said.
Change of perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. In other words, maybe I think you can also say that she's trying to that the coach creates empathy for the athletes, and that the athletes create empathy for the coach. Not sure if that's too far fetched, but I think that's what you can make out of what she was saying, and I really like that. Because it reminded me a lot of times of myself being in that, sometimes it's
in the same spot.
Yeah, sometimes it can be a little bit of a predicament, but, you know, we have to find a solution somehow, And, you know, I would never, of course, throw a coach under the bus. Why would I? That's absolutely stupid. But also at the same time, you know, I want the athlete to be happy. And that's why I think she did a great job of explaining that.
Yeah. And so basically to me, what I looked or thought about the most were the differences I asked about between male and female basketball. And the way she... Like, of course, we were talking stereotypes. We made that clear. But in general, she said that guys can shut off, like, emotional or topics from off court off better and then just perform, you know? Like, and she said females might be a little bit tougher on that. And she put that as, like, a strength for the guys. And, you know, I already said it in the episode that I don't quite agree. And Because I think it's important to talk about that, like this type of stuff. You know, like German and English listeners will know since they listened to the last episode with KD, who was talking about, or Klaus Dieter KD sounds like somebody else was on here. Yeah. That communication is key, and we want like people to have more positive experiences than negatives. And I think it can be a very positive experience that if you can share something like this. And so I was thinking, you know, in like the weight room and stuff, you know, players start talking, you know, like especially if you do like the extra mile and you're there when everybody left. And, you know, Dom, you're also always there. And would you agree to that, that players don't really put that on the table as much, or do they just kind of hold that back? And then you like, this can be like, this doesn't have to be this year. Like, do they come up with topics to you like that where you're like, they're not totally shutting this off. They're thinking about this. They're just not sharing it.
And there it goes back to the fact, what kind of a connection you can establish to a player.
Exactly. That's why I'm like, sometimes, of course, you're not going to have that with everybody. No. And not everybody is going to be that talkative in the weight room. But have you experienced that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there were a few situations when I was even surprised that a player approached me about certain topics I, you know, in the beginning, I wouldn't have expected that they approach me with a topic like that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't happen overnight. Yeah, that just takes time.
Obviously.
Builds, I mean, yeah, like I said, trust is of course an issue here.
Yeah.
But it did happen, yeah, sure, for sure.
So I do think it's working on there, and I think that just shows how, like, talking about it helps. I think that's what we can take from this. Like, you know, we talked about it, happy medium, not too much, not less, but also thinking about other episodes with Alex. And I could name some more names who also said communication is key. But then obviously the sword of the trust also comes in, like you said. And especially for you guys, performance assistant coach, staff in general, being in that between spot of like head coach, players. Yeah.
I also...
Between players even, you like even have information between the players that they might not even have.
I also really liked what she said, that she is in a special situation as a performance coach and as an assistant coach, because she just have a different access to the players than the head coach does. That's also something I picked up and I really liked, because it's true. The head coach, in the end, he has to be responsible for everything. Yeah. But she can also, how should I say that? She was talking a lot about filter. You know, she has to filter things she picks up. Is that something that the head coach needs to know? Is that something that the athlete needs to know? You know, these are all decisions she has to make.
Yeah, but I think that job, or this responsibility, you take over then, if you take that role, like that, it's a lot of responsibility, I think. And it's a question if that really is your responsibility, or to like what degree, let's say. And I think, and then we're back to the other topic, the more openly you communicate in that team, and the more openly that culture is, the easier that job gets.
True. Yeah, it's getting deeper.
Yeah, we're getting deeper and deeper behind the scenes of professional sports. But you know, that's the goal of this podcast. So I really like it, to be honest.
All right.
Yes. So another episode with a lot of different perspective to pick that up again. Playing, coaching, and like performance coaching and assistant coaching, like three different topics, male, female basketball. We had it all in here. I really liked the episode. I'm looking forward to the next one with you, and especially seeing you with a hopefully even longer beard.
Yeah, I think there's nothing I can do for the next weeks.
All right, Dom, have fun. Good luck with the playoffs, and we see you in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir. Goodbye, poppies.
Yes, shout out to the poppies. Thanks for listening.